pursuant to the governor's executive orders and mayoral emergency proclamation suspending and modifying requirements for in-person meetings. During the coronavirus disease emergency COVID-19, the Citizens General Obligation Bond Oversight Committee will convene remotely until this committee is legally authorized to meet in person. Public comment will be available on each item on this agenda. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Comments or opportunities to speak during the public comment period are available via phone call by calling 415-655-0001. Again, that's 415-655-0001. Access code 146-289-8016. Again, 146-289-8016. Then hit pound and then pound again. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussions, but you will be muted and in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up, dial star 3 to be added to the speaker line. Best practices are to call from a quiet location, speak clearly and slowly, and turn down your television or radio. Alternatively, you may submit public comment via email to roseanne.torrey@sfgov.org, and that will be forwarded to the committee and will be included as part of the official file. Please note that this meeting is recorded and will be available at sfgovtv.org. Chair McHugh, would you like me to take roll?
Yes, please.
Item 1, roll call. Member Chu? Absent. Member Larkin? Member Larkin? You might be muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted. I'm here.
There you are.
Yeah. And now I'll mute again.
Member Matthews?
Present.
Thank you. Chair McHugh?
Here.
Vice Chair Natoli?
Here.
Member Pantoja? Absent. Member Post?
Here.
And Member Sanderlin?
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. It's 9:36 a.m. just for the record. Chair McHugh, would you like me to call agenda item 2?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Opportunity for the public to comment on any matters within the committee's jurisdiction that are not on the agenda. Members of the public who wish to provide public comment on this item should call 415-655-0001, access code 146-289-8016, then pound, and then press pound again. If you haven't already done so, please dial star 3 to line up to speak. A system prompt will indicate you have raised your hand. Please wait until the system indicates you have been unmuted and you may begin your comments. Please note that you will have 3 minutes to speak. So I'm checking the queue for public speaking. I don't see any hands raised. So, Madam Chair, would you like me to go on to agenda item 3?
Yes.
Approval with possible modification of the minutes of the December 14th, 2020 meeting.
Make a motion to accept the minute.
I second.
Was that Member Matthews first and who second?
Siobhan.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I'm going to take roll for this. Member 2. Sorry?
Roseanne, this is Ken Rue. Before we take roll, we need to see if there's any public comment.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No.
Okay. Members of the public who wish to provide public comment on this item should call 415-655-0001, access code 146-289-8016, then pound and then pound again. If you haven't already done so, please dial star 3 to line up to speak. A system prompt will indicate you have raised your hand. Please wait until the system indicates you have been unmuted and you may begin your comments. Please note that you will have 3 minutes. So I'm looking at the queue and I do not see any hands raised. So can I go ahead and take roll then?
Yes, if there's no public comment.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Member Chu is absent. Member Larkin?
They're okay.
Member Matthews?
Yes.
Chair McHugh?
Yes.
Vice Chair Natoli?
Yes.
Member Pantoja is absent. Member Post?
Yes.
Member Sanderlin?
Abstain.
Abstain. Oh. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So we have a quorum on that vote. Chair McHugh, should I go on to agenda item 4?
Yes, please.
Presentation from various departments regarding the 2018 Embarcadero Seawall Earthquake Safety Bond. Liaison report, the 2018 Embarcadero Seawall Earthquake Safety Bond and possible action by the committee in response to such presentation. This morning we have Carlos Colon presenting.
Good morning. I'll be presenting with Brad Benson, the Waterfront Resilience Program Director. And so let me
there you
go
are.
Ahead and share.
Thank you, Carlos.
There you go.
So my name is Brad Benson. I'm the Port's Waterfront Resilience Director. This is our first time presenting to GOBOC. We're pleased to be here. I'll get into the reason why it's the first time. We've been delayed in bond issuance until very recently. But today's presentation, next slide, Carlos. We want to give you an update on that bond sale. We're involved in some litigation that held up the bond sale, so we'll describe that and the resolution of that litigation. What we're doing with the Embarcadero Seawall Program and more broadly the Resilience Program at the port is developing a long-range capital effort. So we'll give you an overview of that planning effort. We'll focus in on the two main prongs of that effort, the Embarcadero Seawall Program, covering the area from Fisherman's Wharf to Mission Creek. And then we'll talk about the Army Corps of Engineers Flood Resiliency Study, which is a port-wide effort. We're at the point in the planning effort where we're beginning to develop seismic and flood measures to deploy along the waterfront. And then Carlos is going to walk through our first 2018 Proposition A quarterly report, and we'll describe next steps. Next slide, please. So, as I mentioned earlier, the city was sued by Denny regarding the way that the city published its ballot question and ballot simplification statement, among other issues. The city attorney successfully defended the city's action at trial, and that decision was upheld at the California Court of Appeals. Just recently, the California Supreme Court denied a petition for review. So it was really because of that litigation that the port and the controller's office were not in a position to issue the first bond sale until June 2nd, at which time we issued the first tranche of bonds in the amount of $49,675,000. In the intervening period, the port has been using city and port operating revenues and state grant funds to advance the program. We do have a plan to reimburse eligible expenses using proceeds of bond sale. Next slide, please. So the Waterfront Resilience Program was formed by Director Forbes to address seismic and flood risk along the entire waterfront. The initial focus of that work was really in the Embarcadero zone, but has since expanded port-wide. What you see on this map is what we understand about lateral spread risk, and I'll get into this a little bit more, but we've got very significant lateral spread risk in the fill areas of the northern waterfront. And you're seeing also in blue sea level rise mapping that shows that over time with increasing amounts of sea level rise, we have very significant impacts beyond the port's jurisdiction to the city. Next slide, please. So we've developed a draft goal statement. The port's waterfront resilience program will take actions to reduce seismic and climate change risks that support a safe, equitable, sustainable, and vibrant waterfront. Next slide, please. Underlying that are draft principles that we've been working through with the public. We've really been out in a series of engagements with the public over the last 2 years, keeping them apprised of the work that we're doing. The first goal is to prioritize life safety and disaster response, including city and regional disaster response. We want to advance equity throughout the Waterfront Resilience Program, looking at not only the communities that we engage, but contracting and job opportunities, you know, through to the decision-making process. We're looking for opportunities to enhance and sustain economic and ecological opportunities. People love the waterfront. We want to continue to inspire an adaptable waterfront that improves the health of the bay, ensures public access, preserves the beautiful historic resources along the waterfront, and provides opportunities for diverse families, businesses, and neighborhoods to thrive. And throughout all of this effort, we want to lead a transparent program. Next slide. There are a number of efforts that comprise the Waterfront Resilience Program. They vary by geography. Some are bond funded, many are not. So port-wide, we're developing an ADAPT plan, and this is really looking ahead for the next couple of decades at the work that we have to do to make the waterfront resilience. Also port-wide is this Army Corps flood resiliency study that I'll tell you more about. The Embarcadero Seawall Program is focused in that northern waterfront area that I mentioned between Fisherman's Wharf and Mission Creek. In the southern waterfront, we're beginning to assess seismic vulnerability. And then we've been working with the planning department and SFMTA, as well as other departments, on an Islis Creek adaptation strategy. That's Caltrans grant funded. And the southern waterfront seismic vulnerability assessment is port operating fund funded. Next slide, please. So digging into the Embarcadero Seawall Program, I'll start by saying the seawall was built in segments over a 40-year period, well over 100 years ago. A marvel of engineering, but it's in need of significant investment due to the risks that we've identified. We've just completed a more than two-year multi-hazard risk assessment to inform work on the Embarcadero seawall area. This was a study effort that was called out in the bond report for Proposition A. Next slide, please. So this program is in a planning phase from 2017 through 2021 this year. followed by design and construction. We're looking at both seismic and flood risk associated with the seawall. We're very grateful to voters for the bond support in 2018. And our big concern, you know, is we've got an Embarcadero Historic District, which is highly at risk. Next slide, please. So what is the multi-hazard risk assessment? It's a very refined investigation of seismic and flood hazards along and the consequences of those events along this stretch. The engineering team looked at four different earthquake levels, a range of different sea level rise scenarios, quantified all the assets and services in this zone, whether port owned or city owned. City has quite a bit of infrastructure in the Embarcadero. There was an advanced geotechnical investigation that took about a year to support this effort to better understand soil conditions in this area. And then the team developed models to predict damages from different events to these assets and services. Next slide, please. So the findings of this at a very high level, up to $30 billion in damage and disruption from combined seismic and flood risk by the end of the century. The geotechnical program did identify some areas that are less at risk. We were happy to find out that there's lower lateral spread risk in the South Beach area, south of the Bay Bridge. Ferry building area has very significant seismic risk, very deep Young Bay mud in this area. It's the former Yerba Buena Cove. We identified that the bulkhead wards and buildings right along the Embarcadero north of the ferry building are at the greatest risk of seismic damage. And we'll show you why in a moment. Finally, from a sea level rise perspective, there's very significant flood risk between 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise. It's a very flat waterfront. It was built at a certain elevation. Once you get to overtopping of that shoreline edge, you get extensive flood damages extending into downtown. Next slide, please. So we did find that the Embarcadero roadway, which has very important transportation and utility assets in it, is at significant risk to ground shaking and liquefaction. In Fisherman's Wharf, there are aging pile supported structures vulnerable to ground shaking and liquefaction. So it's a very vulnerable area of the city. Next slide, please. So this gives you a sense about how the seawall was initially constructed. They went out to deep water. They trenched, created a rock dike about 100 feet wide at its base and 30 to 40 feet tall. And then they constructed wharves supported by piles driven through the rock dike. And then the piers extend out from the wharves. So it's an unusual man-made shoreline with a lot of infrastructure and development in it. And the fill behind the seawall, as well as this Young Bay mud under it, are very weak soils. So their performance is not good in a seismic event. Next slide, please. This is what we're concerned about happening in some areas of the waterfront. With very strong ground shaking, and we're talking about a 1906 type of event or stronger, the soils would begin to liquefy. This area is on a slope. Start to have slope failure, seawall movement towards the bay, causing damage in the roadway and in that bulkhead zone that I was talking about earlier. To the right, you see actual pictures along the Embarcadero of this kind of phenomenon. This was near Pier 27 in the 1906 earthquake, the lower right photo. Next slide, please. The wharves actually serve another function. They provide flood protection where they exist. You can see, you know, king tide today, you start to have higher water levels. There's not a lot of space left. These were built at a certain elevation. They functioned effectively for 100 years, but we've already had 9 inches of sea level rise. Next slide, please. So we are studying and developing a planning effort around a range of sea level rise curves. The science always evolves on this. The Army Corps of Engineers uses curves that you see at the bottom of the left-hand graphic. They have a low, intermediate, and high curve. State of California published its guidance just a few years ago. And you can see that the state of California likely 1 in 200 chance and H++ scenario curves are significantly higher than the Army Corps curves. On the right, you get a sense about what happens with sea level rise. You know, initially, we're worried about 100-year flood events that can overtop the seawall. These are very infrequent, 1% chance storm events that with waves could overtop the shoreline. But as sea level rises, we begin worrying about high tides and daily flooding. And there, it's also a permeable shoreline. So with increases in high tide, we can see increases in groundwater affecting infrastructure below grade. Next slide, please. Now I want to get a little bit into the Army Corps of Engineers flood study. We're very lucky to have this effort ongoing. Next slide, please. So we do have flooding during king tide events and some storm events a couple of times a year, causing lane closures in the Embarcadero. It was really through an earlier continuing authorities program investigation with the Army Corps of Engineers that the Army Corps recommended doing a broader flood risk study for the entire port waterfront. The benefit of working with the Army Corps is that they're the nation's coastal flood experts. We think that this is a 7-year effort with the Army Corps, subject to a 50-50 cost share. So port pays half the cost, Army Corps, federal government pays the other half. We're looking at a range of different sea level rise curves. We're working broadly with the waterfront community to gain input. If the Army Corps finds a federal interest in a project along the waterfront to reduce coastal flood risk, that could open the door to potentially very significant federal funding, $1 billion or more. Two-thirds paid by the federal government, one-third match on a local basis. Next slide, please. So the Army Corps follows a very specific process of developing studies like this. And I will say that the word study is a bit of a misnomer, because what this effort is driving towards is a tentatively selected plan for coastal flood risk reduction that would be recommended to Congress if the Army Corps finds a federal interest. So this is really developing a project, is the way to think about it. So where we are in the, we've been working on this Future Without project. This is a very comprehensive modeling effort looking at flood risk to port city assets and services, including private buildings in the future floodplain through 2090. So, and it's a probabilistic analysis that is calculating those potential flood damages over time, because that would affect the nation's economy. The Army Corps uses a planning construct of looking at problems, opportunities, objectives, constraints, and considerations. We go through an iterative planning process where we develop an array, meaning a range of alternatives, so that we can evaluate the cost efficiency and effectiveness of the different choices for projects. We're in the middle of that process. We just finished something called the focused array. Again, this is driving towards a plan, a tentatively selected plan for the 7-mile area that would be endorsed by the Army Corps and by the city. That would undergo environmental review under the National Environmental Policy Act and be included in a feasibility report to Congress with a recommendation for funding. We would expect that to happen by 2026. Next slide, please. This gives you a sense of public and private assets that are in the future floodplain that we're looking at. More than 40 miles of roadway, 25 miles of muni and cable car track, 360,000 regional commuters go through this area, 2,600 residential and commercial buildings. It's a very diverse area, and it includes major wastewater infrastructure that will be affected by sea level rise. So we're collaborating with the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. Next slide, please. I'm gonna just share very briefly the kind of planning work that we're involved in now. What kinds of actions can we take to reduce seismic and flood risk? Next slide, please. So we're looking at a range of seismic measures. We've got a very strong engineering team that's begun sort of conceptual design of different approaches. So if you see in this seismic measures table, there's a top row, shoreline stabilization. If we want to eliminate that lateral spreading risk, there are a few measures like a new seawall, bayward of the existing one, that's the nearshore buttress, that would involve creating new land along the Embarcadero. Similar concept, a landside buttress, doing ground improvements in the Embarcadero to create a stable shoreline. There's a concept of drilling shafts, very large 8 to 12 foot diameter shafts in the Hurricane Way and Embarcadero northbound lanes to create more shoreline stability. And in some shallower areas of the waterfront, we can do something called a super bulkhead wharf, which is really driving new piles through the seawall to stabilize it. But this only works in shallower areas of the waterfront. And then we're looking at more targeted measures, retrofits, liquefaction mitigation of the fill as ways of reducing that seismic risk exposure. For each of these, we've developed cost estimates, production rates, impact analysis, and looking at adaptation for sea level rise. Next slide, please. And this is going to be significantly disruptive work. We could end up in a position of having to close the northbound lanes of the Embarcadero and reroute traffic. So in our... different choices for minimizing the seismic risk along the Embarcadero. Next slide, please. In the Army Corps study, we're at this sort of high level focused array, but we've been looking at conceptual approaches for dealing with flood risk. Levees, seawalls, flood walls. We looked at breakwaters. I think we've eliminated breakwaters as an effective mechanism for the San Francisco waterfront. Raising structures, deployables are options for the near term. You know, we have the Embarcadero Muni Tunnel along the Embarcadero that is potentially exposed to a 500-year flood, and deployables may be an approach there on an interim basis. We're also looking at ecological measures for reducing flood risk, and these are more or less applicable in some areas of the waterfront. The southern waterfront has more room to deploy ecological improvements. Next slide, please. So now I want to give you a sense of where we are in the schedule and then hand it off to Carlos. Next slide, please. So we've done this existing conditions analysis, very detailed risk assessment. We understand the consequences of earthquakes and flooding. We've been in the process of developing these seismic and flood measures. Right now, we're in a process of developing alternatives for consideration by the Port Commission. We think that this will be a presentation to the Commission of different alternatives in the April and May timeframe. And then we will go back in June or July to recommend the initial Proposition A projects. For the committee's understanding, We think this is a multi-billion dollar problem that we're dealing with just along the Embarcadero zone. So Proposition A is a down payment on a broader program of improvements over time. We're again going to focus on life safety and disaster response improvements for this first set of expenditures. When we have the commission's endorsement of those Proposition A projects, we'll start CEQA, do additional detailed investigation, and start conceptual design of those projects with a goal of starting construction in 2024. The ADAPT plan that I mentioned earlier will provide context for the public about how we plan to, over time, address remaining risks along the Embarcadero. Carlos, do you want to take over from here?
There we go. Sorry, I just had to be unmuted. Good morning. My name is Carlos Colon. I'm the Waterfront Program Administrator. And I'm going to just let you know right now that I do have a toddler and an infant at home. And I'm going to put my headphones on now because they are back. Hold on, give me one second here. Can I be heard?
So this is the overview scope and budget of the bond. This was presented to the, this was inserted in the accountability report we submitted back in 2019 before the first bond sale. This is what we projected back in 2019. Things will change. So as Brad described before in the schedule, we are currently in the selection process, which we finalized by this summer. And so probably in the third or fourth presentation to the committee, these numbers will be adjusted. So these are some of the highlights and accomplishments, upcoming milestones that we've accomplished so far. Brad has kind of gone through most of them. We have completed the multi-hazard risk assessment, which was a two-year effort. So let me move this screen here. We are developing the alternatives, and we should get that done with the Prop A selection by this summer, as he described before. The main thing here are the risks. Because I deal with the money, this is the biggest risk for me, is the second bond sale. You know, if we do not have the funding needed to continue this work, then the work will stop. Luckily, we are in a good place right now. We do have sufficient funding from the first bond sale that should get us through this calendar year, and I believe through the first half of 2022. So right here, this is sort of the overall program and all of the funding that's been used to support the program. Right now, you can see it's almost about $78 million that's been allocated to the program through the bond. We've had a $5 million grant from the state, as well as port funding. Now, what I want to point out here is that we did receive $9 million from Capital Planning, the revolving fund, to sort of jumpstart this program. We did reimburse them $6 million after the first bond sale, and we will be reimbursing them another $3 million in the next fiscal year. So you will see that $3 million in the gray from capital planning. This is a snapshot of what it looks like now, but that $3 million will go away the next fiscal year, and it will be part of the bond funding. The port also supported this program with a loan when we were prevented from the first bond sale. So they gave us $11.5 million to continue this work. So I would say after we reimburse them next fiscal year, that the total effort to this program will be reduced by about $14.5 million. So it will go from 78 to 54. Now this is focused just on the bond expenditures. As you can see here, we've sort of spent or allocated half of the bond funding so far. There is a portion of port labor, planning. You do see the flood study in gray, and we do have 9.3 million encumbered in our CH2M contract. Now, this is a snapshot of what it is right now. So we will be abating some funding of port labor and the CH2M contract again later this fiscal year. And we do project that with CH2M that they project to spend about 12 million this calendar year. We do expect to spend about 3 million in port labor this calendar year. So as you can see in our balance, we do have 23. I project about 14 this calendar year in expenditures. So you can see we do have enough money to get us through this calendar year. And I believe through the beginning of the next calendar year. We do expect to start the new bond process or the new bond sale process in January of 2022. Now, this is sort of just another way to show our expenditures to date and the categories that we presented in our accountability report back in 2019. This, again, is just describing what I've already described, and I'd be happy to answer questions at the end. And so that's the end of the funding and the bond presentation, but Brad and I are here to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, I had one. Can we go back to the schedule? Yeah. On the right side of the schedule, as you're out past 2022, you've got, the line's broken. Preliminary design ends or only goes out so far, goes beyond the end of the schedule, as does the CEQA DEIR. What do you envision as being the end dates for those two things, the PE and the CEQA process?
So this is Brad. We expect that CEQA and design will continue through 2023 and into 2024, and that construction will start in 2024. However, the reason that we're not showing that schedule here today is a lot of that schedule, it's really dependent on the projects that the Port Commission selects for bond funding. So some of those choices could be much more complicated or simpler for purposes of the design and environmental review and permitting processes. So we don't want to give false confidence about the out-year schedule. But in our next report, we'll come back with revised information on that longer schedule.
And I wasn't looking for solid dates. I just wanted to get an idea what the time frame was. And you answered that question. Now, for the construction projects that you are in conceptual design or about to start conceptual design for, and then you're going to go into PE for, do you have enough money in this bond to pay for those projects, or do you need a subsequent bond to pay for them?
Well, we think that there's about, within this bond, in terms of hard construction dollars, we think that there's about $300 million worth of improvements that we'll be able to make. Again, I mentioned that we think that this is a multi-billion dollar effort over time.
Yeah.
Which is why we're very pleased to have the Army Corps working with us in a move towards federal funding. We're pursuing other state options. We're very pleased that there's a resilience bond in the city's GO bond schedule. I think it's about $130 million for 2026. So we're going to need to build on the success with Prop A and identify other robust sources over time. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the program development effort that we're in right now.
Yeah. On a related question, the public outreach you've been doing, I mean, what have you been saying to the public? Because it seems to me that you've got a lot more information that you still have to acquire before you can make any real substantive presentations to them about what they're actually going to see. At this point, you're just showing them options of what might happen.
Yeah, we've been carrying the public along during the risk assessment process. We've actually had a pretty successful series of community engagements in all three geographies of the port's waterfront over the last 2 years. We've been doing more work in the Embarcadero seawall area because that's where the program started with its focus. And walked people through the hazards, walked people through an understanding of, you know, of what city and public infrastructure exists in given areas. We've gotten a sense about public priorities in terms of what to focus on, what they value about the waterfront. So I actually think that we've got a strong public understanding of where we're headed. And I think there's alignment on the principles that I mentioned earlier. Really, this focus on life safety and disaster response resonated with people. And I think that that's a strong foundation for moving into this next phase of project selection. So we're hoping that with that investment of time and energy, that we'll move into CEQA and permitting with as little public controversy as we can manage. We always know that we expect public controversy, particularly with high impact.
Yeah. You haven't gotten any real serious negative feedback, like people saying, oh, just let nature take its course and let the sea reclaim the eastern part of San Francisco, nothing like that yet?
We hear a broad range of ideas, but I think that people love the waterfront, and there are things that they definitely want to preserve. I think that there's, of the work that I've done at the port over the last 20 years, I've never seen such public support for this, you know, this kind of effort. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Good. I hope you can stay that way. I enjoyed your presentation. It was a lot of information, though. I'll look forward to hearing your subsequent ones.
Thank you.
Okay. Roseanne, you're muted.
Yeah. I see Member Post has her hand raised.
Yes, thank you. I just want to commend your team on this presentation, Brad. Your presentation was excellent, both the written and the oral presentation that you gave us this morning. Thank you. I presume it's published on your website and that members of the public will access it, because it was very clear and descriptive and answered a lot of my questions. I also took one of the port's tours of the Embarcadero ferry building area, and that is very dramatic when you really can see where the water level is now, where it could be, etc. So kudos to your team. I guess if Mark De La Rosa is still on the call, I just, as Brian was pointing out, this is going to be a huge project for the city. It seems to me time is of the essence and it can't happen fast enough, but there will be vast quantities of money going out for it. So Mark, in the controller's office, your audit team, I presume you'll really be kicking into gear to make sure that all the funding for this project is properly spent, since we're going to have a lot of contractors involved, and just giving the public some assurance that the seawall bond, as much or more than others, I would say, given the massive size of the projects we're talking about here, you guys are on this.
That's right. Member Post, members of the committee, yes, the 2018 seawall safety is actually next up in line on our work plan for the expenditures audit. We're currently working on one on affordable housing, but I'll give you all the details and that update, but definitely noted, and we already have this on our work plan.
Great, well, thank you. And again, great work at the port, and keep going, keep moving forward. Again, Brad and Carlos, thank you for your presentation today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So next we would hear from Member Pantoja, who is the liaison to this bond program, but he sent me email earlier that he couldn't make the meeting, so he'll give his presentation at the next meeting. So Madam Chair, would you like me to take public comment, assuming that all the Q&A is over with?
Yeah, I think we should move to public comment, and we'll hear from Bart maybe at the next meeting.
Okay. Members of the public who wish to provide public comment on this item should call 415-655-0001, access code 146-289-8016, then pound and then pound again. If you haven't already done so, please dial *3 to line up to speak. A system prompt will indicate you have raised your hand. Please wait until the system indicates you have been unmuted, and you may begin your comments. Please note that you will have 3 minutes. So I'm checking the queue and I do not see any hands raised for public comment. So Madam Chair, may I go on to agenda item 5?
Yes, please.
Opportunity for committee members to comment or take action on any matters within the committee's jurisdiction. Number one, fiscal year 2020 to 2021, CGOBOC work initiatives, A, standardized templates, B, expenditure audits, C, public finance upcoming bond issuances. Number two, other committee business, A, CSA fiscal year 2020-2021 work plan, B, CGOBOC fiscal year 2020 to 2021 work plan, housing public perception survey, follow up on the public integrity review, independent review of the whistleblower program.
Hi everyone, this is Peg Stevenson, and unless the chair or vice chair have any comments on the items, I can just go ahead and walk down the agenda item.
Go for it, Peg.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, everyone. Actually, let's just suggest that we take one item out of order because Anna Van Degna, who's our public finance manager, has to leave for another meeting. And if you had any questions or comments about the upcoming bond issuances and the schedule that was in your packet, it would be great to get her before she leaves. So if we can go to item C and just ask Anna to refresh your memory about the content of that memo, and then you can ask her any questions before she needs to depart. Anna?
Sorry about that. Having some technical challenges there for a second. So we've been very busy to date with our GO bond issuances. Currently, the next two that we have on our forward calendar are the ESER bond issuance, as well as the affordable housing bond issue. Following that, we will be looking at our next MTA bond sale. We're developing also the first health and recovery bond sale. And then as you heard today, Seawall would be next. And finally, it's looking like we could have another second issuance of the ESER program either this summer or this fall. With that, and we're also working on a GO bond refinancing. With that, I'll see if folks have any questions.
Okay, if there's no questions about the upcoming bond issuances, and I know that after Anna has to go, Vishal will stay on. So if people have questions later, he'll be available. Thanks, Anna. So going back to item 1A, standardized templates. And just to remind the committee members, the way this agenda item is listed is we have everything that's on your work program listed, whether there's action on it or not, so we can bring them up as needed. There's no action or movement on standardized templates. The status here is that I think Member Chu was designated to be the liaison on it and would do work with my staff as soon as we can make time available to look over the templates that are being submitted and the format of the bond program materials that you get and, you know, do some tasks like ask committee members questions, try to make sure that we move to standardized reporting as much as possible so that there's less variation. We all agree it's a good project to do and we want to spend time on it, but it's not occurring this quarter. And I'll stay in conversation with Kristen Chu to see if we can get work started on it next quarter. Expenditure audits. I'll call on Mark De La Rosa to let you know where the audit group is on their bond expenditure audits issuance. Mark?
Great. Thanks, Peg. Mark De La Rosa, Controller's Office. Actually, Roseanne, may I share a slide, sure. Please?
Yes.
Just wanted to give you kind of a refresh on what we've completed so far and let's wind up. Can you see? Let's see.
Might want to switch to reading view, Mark.
Yes.
Yeah, you got senior citizens watching.
Apologies. You know what, I've been having issues this morning, but I will just walk you through what I have. So as you probably know, we have completed 9 geobond expenditures audits so far. There is one that's currently in the pipeline that we had some delays due to the COVID pandemic response. We currently have the 2016 affordable housing geobond audit that's currently ongoing. We resumed that in December of 2020, and we plan to issue that by March of 2021, so in a couple of months. The 11th one that's in the pipeline that I mentioned per committee member question, the 2018 CUL safety improvement geobond is planned for our next round of geobonds. So as soon as we complete the 2016 affordable housing, we will then resume that CUL safety as part of our expenditure audit program.
Any questions or comments for Mark? Okay, moving on to two other committee business, 2A, CSA work plan. So again, just to refresh your memory, we would normally have continuous updates on a published work plan for the fiscal year. Because of our COVID deployments, we didn't publish a work plan in the normal format. So just to give you a little bit of update on what the performance side is working on, and then I'll ask Mark to do the same for the audit side. My staff have been 100% deployed to COVID, except for Mary Hom, who is our business manager for all other purposes and doing committee administration. So we have paused work on almost all our other work, except for some basic maintenance on nonprofit monitoring, the performance metrics publishing, and a few things that are charter mandated in that way. What we're doing now is during the January, February, March quarter, we're trying to reduce our COVID deployment hours a little bit to be able to do work on, again, some basic charter mandates that we need to execute during the fiscal year, like support to the performance program, so the performance measures can be published in the mayor's budget book. The nonprofit monitoring program requires basic work to keep it carried forward and on schedule. And we're supporting a critical path project with the Human Rights Commission on the city's Office of Racial Equity development. During the April, May, June quarter, we're again hoping to reduce our COVID deployment hours a little bit further so that we can both work with your committee on the list of items that are on your work plan and be able to start work on planning for next fiscal year. There's a public safety project that is of high interest that we are interested in carrying forward, but everything depends candidly on how the COVID emergency goes. I'm sure people have been following this, where we are now getting underway with the vaccination program. The city's putting significant effort into preparing both high volume vaccination sites that'll be operated in concert with the private health insurance providers, Kaiser and Sutter and the like, and preparing community-based vaccination programs. At the same time, there'll be a new reopening effort starting now because the Bay Area will emerge from state restrictions this week. And then we'll have to ramp up a couple of related efforts in the COVID response, including the schools reopening effort and the rehousing program to try and work on exiting out of the city's rented hotels. So I'm just want to be honest with you about how my staff time will go and what work I hope we can get to in the last quarter of this fiscal year. But I'm feeling more positive now than I was certainly the last time we met. That's where we are on the performance side of the work plan. Mark, can you comment on your memo and the audits work that's underway?
Yes, certainly. Thanks, Peg. As Peg alluded to, this is unlike any other fiscal years in which our work plan process was slightly revised because of the COVID-19 pandemic response. Just wanted to kind of give you a broad overview of our CSA audits staff's time and how it's been divided in the last few months, specifically this current fiscal year, 2021. A good portion of our staff are responding to the COVID-19 through our cost recovery function. What this means is that we are basically leading an effort that is trying to get as much of our FEMA dollars and CARES Act dollars as possible. This is part of our emergency response plan for the city, with the CSA audits being the lead cost recovery function. So most a good portion of our staff's time is really devoted to gathering documentation from the various city departments in terms of their COVID-19 response costs. And we then pre-audit them and submit them to FEMA as part of our public assistance grant process. And then on the CARES Act Coronavirus Relief Fund or CRF funding, really our staff has been tasked with also doing some pre-audits of the costs that are being devoted to the COVID-19 response efforts. So that's about a good probably 45% to 50% of our time. The remaining hours really are devoted to the other ongoing work that we continuously do, given that we cannot stop our audits and oversight function. So we continue to conduct risk-based audits and assessments. Since I think we last reported, we've completed a few of our performance audits, issued our medical examiner drug evidence inventory audit, our DPH city option program, our SFPD use of force data audit that we also issued back in the fall. We continue to do our construction audits. As have been mentioned, we are continuing our geobond expenditure audits. We're also doing something very similar that's been requested by the SFPUC's revenue bond group. So we're doing revenue bond expenditure audits on behalf of the commission as well. In addition, we're doing our IT cybersecurity audits and other mandated audits In addition to that, as you know, we are also conducting our public integrity assessments. We've completed or issued 4 preliminary assessments so far, and we have 3 in the pipeline that relates to the Mohamed Nuru, and as well as the SFPUC, Harlan Kelly case. And as you also know, we continue to do our whistleblower program administration. We continue to follow up on our audit recommendations, and also we continue to complete our obligation as internal auditors to comply with government auditing standards. And we're preparing for our triennial peer review that will be coming up sometime in the summer or the fall. So that's the required government auditing standards effort that for us to say that we are in compliance with government auditing standards. We are going to go through our triennial peer review sometime in the next few months. And that's all for SCSA audits.
Questions or comments for Mark?
Thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome. And I'm sorry, I don't have my my video. I've been logged off every time I try to share my video this morning. So I apologize for that.
And then Mark, remind me, I'm sorry if you said so and I missed it, but you are planning on issuing a affordable housing bond audit report.
That's right.
Next couple months. What's the expected date?
March, actually, 2021. So we are continuing our field work right now, and we're hoping to complete that in the next few weeks and go through our quality assurance process.
Okay. If there's no more questions or comments for Mark, the next item is your own work plan for the committee. And I made some updates to it, and there was a draft in the packet and materials that were posted. So I'll just say where I think you are and then ask the chairs for their feedback, and we can iterate on this going forward. You had a pause in your meetings during 2020 due to the COVID situation. Meeting cadence picked back up in the fall, and then you had what I would only describe as a grueling series of hearings where you caught up on hearing from all the bond program managers. So I know we all appreciate everyone sitting through that. Having the seawall bond on today sort of catches you up to the full program of bonds under your oversight. And so for the meetings that are going to go on during the rest of this calendar year, we can have a more normal cadence. And so I tried to drop in the logical sequence of presentations into your calendar for the next calendar year. And let me actually, Roseanne, if you can pass me the presenter ball, maybe I'll try and pull that page up while we talk about it just for a second.
While you're doing that, would this be a nice time to introduce our newest member? I don't know Judy, and I'd like to welcome her and say hello and just ask who she is.
Sure. Why don't I stop and...
Since we're talking about our work plan and she'll be a part of it, it might be a nice time. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all, to see your faces. I guess, do you want me to tell you a little bit about myself?
Yeah, just for a minute, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of new back to the city. I'm an Army brat, so I've lived all over, but this has kind of always been my home away from home. So I've been back in San Francisco for a little over 2 years now. I'm the controller at the San Francisco Symphony, and I've been there a little over a year. So I'm a finance, accounting, CPA by background. But I also have a long history of process improvement, Six Sigma type work. So those are kind of my interests. I live here with my wife, and I have 2 grown daughters. One is in college in North Carolina, one lives in Florida. What else? I'm happy to be here. I'm a member of the grand jury, which is how I made my way to this committee.
Oh, okay.
And
so you're you're our grand jury appointment. I was wondering, yeah, what's
correct? Yes, I think Yes, I'm a grand jury appointment. So I am learning a ton about the city and how it works. And this just adds to my learning. So grateful to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, Judy. Thanks.
Are people seeing my screen?
Yes.
Okay. And do I have the correct tab up? It's your work plan draft update.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I have a couple tabs open. So here you are on Monday, January 25th. And then I'm trying to scroll down to the rest of the meetings for the calendar year. So I think the date that you settled on ends up being the fourth Monday of the month that you meet. So we would fill those dates in here. You would go to a cadence of having one major bond program at each meeting instead of multiple. And then if there's also an expenditure audit that's related to that bond at the time, you would have that on the same agenda. So that's what's shown in March, affordable housing bonds and the audit that Mark and I just touched on. And then I think the decision was you wanted to see and hear a report from the whistleblower program probably twice a year. So I need to drop that in one of your meetings in the fall. I'll update that. And then the next meeting in May, you would have the park bonds programs all years together and the port park bond at the same time. They got out of sequence as well, but you would hear them together. I think this notion of the CGOBOC own annual report is not correct, but we can come back to talking about what you want to do about that. And then we would have the citywide capital plan. I think by that time they'll be ready with a draft of it, given the capital plan meeting process. This is where we have the city administrators' capital planning program come and present to you on their updates and projections of the sort of overall need for bond funding, deferred maintenance, their analysis of the city's buildings and facilities, and the sort of long time horizon that they view and how it would impact bond programs going forward. And then you wouldn't meet in June or July. So you would normally have skipped May to July, but July is a very busy month for everybody that works on budget and finance here due to the fiscal year end close and the budget. So it seems prudent to skip that month. So you would meet in August and you would have the all years earthquake safety bonds. By that time, we'll have a fully completed work plan for the fiscal year that will be underway at that time. And then again, we will add in your other business. At your October meeting, you would have both the transportation and the road improvement, and then the paving and street safety bonds all years before you. And then your last meeting in December, the public safety bonds and the housing bonds again, although you heard them in March, but it feels like the way you've been running these meetings, there's a strong enough interest in the housing bond and sort of rapid development that having it back on your calendar in December makes sense. That's reference there to the citywide bond report, again, I think is not correct, but I can update you on our thinking about that. So any questions or feedback on the sequence there?
No questions for me. I think it makes sense. It has been a little while since we've heard from housing. That's the one I'm the liaison for. So it'll be good to have that up next, I think. So happy to see that in March.
And I don't know, Siobhan, have you worked with Judy on where she'll be slotted into the bond programs to help spread the workload a bit? Have you all decided on that?
Not yet. There's a few open liaison spots, but we can touch base on that offline. Sounds good.
Okay, I'm going to take the presentation down if I can figure out how to do that. Okay, can you see each other again now? Okay, and we can always make adjustments to this based on what happens during your hearings. I will work with staff to drop in the whistleblower program event at the right moment. So let's just talk for a minute about your own annual report and then the bond report that our office produces that supports it. And just to refresh your memory, and since you have new members as well, my office, the Controller's Performance Group, does a sort of wrap-up report on all the bond programs, GEO bond programs, where we look at scope, schedule, and budget. We publish it at a high-level summary level with a little bit of narrative on the status of each bond program and then common graphics that show their achievement of scope, schedule, and budget. This is something that the controller values, and we've been doing it both to support your work and generally for public transparency on the bonds. We were trying to do one fiscal year at a time. That was thrown off by the long development process that it took to get all the capital program information properly into the city's new financial system, FSP, when it was built. So we had one report that ran out over an 18-month period from January 2017 to June 2018. And then we caught up again with a normal report for 2018-19. And that's what you heard presented on at your last meeting. Typically, you, the CGOBOT committee, have written a summary report on your own activities. Doing it on a fiscal year cadence seems to make sense. So the sort of the thought process here was that after the close of the fiscal year, you would get reports submitted from each of your liaisons, summary to their activities. We would attach as supporting documentation to that report our bond report as soon as it's available. The two don't have to go in concert, and it usually takes us some time to get all the correct financial information and do any interviews that we need to do with the bond program managers. So by the time June 30th, 2021 rolls around, you'll probably want to be doing an annual report of your own that you don't want to hold up for our reporting. But you can think about that as a committee. I think what our reporting will do, again, is wait until the fiscal year close on June 30th, 2021, and then we'll be doing a two-year report that looks at both fiscal year 1920 and 2021, same kind of scope, schedule, and budget, standardized information, and we would publish that sometime during the fall, as long as it took us to get the information, but we'd certainly hope to get it done before December. So that's our plan on the supporting bond program report. And you can, again, decide as a committee what you want to do about your own report. But I just wanted to make people aware that our report essentially serves as supporting documentation, so you don't have to worry about having a lot of detail in your report. So I'll stop there and see if the chairs want to speak to that.
I don't have a strong opinion about that this year. I don't know how much sense it makes to not align them. What do you think, Jane? Or does anybody on the committee have more experience with this?
Yeah, Brian and I have done this before. And we would submit our comments, as Peg said, fairly brief. They're basically reiterating what you would have said in your liaison report or reports for the prior fiscal year, just summary form, you know, three paragraphs, not three pages, and to supplement what the city puts out. So, I mean, I guess I think we should do it, right? Mm-hmm. Just to be on the record that there are members of this committee, we do pay attention, just so that it's in black and white somewhere, right? Rather than archived videos of the bi-monthly meetings, I would think. And it's, as I said, it's not that heavy a lift, because just keep your notes from your liaison report and you can just, you know, gin up two or three paragraphs for the annual report each year. Peg sends it, tells you what the deadline is, when you need to submit them to her staff, and that's that. It's usually during the summer. At least that's how it was the one time I did it.
I mean, it's our only tangible work product, so we should definitely do it. I mean, three paragraphs is fine, as Lauren said, but they should be pithy. You know, they should be bring home the point of what we did. You know, that we've earned the massive amount of money we get for doing this. And prestige.
Okay, I'm happy to do that if everybody on the committee is.
Yeah, definitely. And just to add on to that, it's not too much of a lift in my experience, so it shouldn't be a problem, I don't think.
Okay.
At your May meeting, you can make a decision about the timing of it, and I'll have a better idea by that time of when we might be able to expect to finish the work on the wrap-up bond report. Okay, any other comments or questions on the work plan? Housing Public Perception Survey. So again, for new committee members, one of the products that our office ran at the committee's request in recent years was a public perception survey. This is where we went out and asked members of the public what their experience was on bond improvements. Were they aware of their connection to the bond program? Their satisfaction level with the improvements. We touched on two bonds the first time we did this. There was a parks project and a street improvement project. And I think we all found it a really valuable exercise to try and come up with a short survey that elicited that kind of information from users of the facilities and improvements. We, the controller's office usually has a pool available of survey firms because we do surveys for other purposes, including the citywide public opinion survey. So we had this work done through a professional surveyor. It was an intercept survey. They're out in the field stopping people at the site and asking them questions. And then they do a rigorous analysis, including demographic analysis of the responses, and we published a report. Again, I think we're all really happy and found the product of that very valuable. Wanted to do it for more bond programs. The highest interest of the committee after the first one was done was in having something done for the housing bond programs, given your interest in the performance of the city's affordable housing bonds. So that is next on our list. It would be an interesting, will be an interesting sort of design issue there, where, you know, there's a couple of different audiences that we've talked about. The people who are, you know, users and tenants of affordable housing, the builders and developers that participate with the city, the citizens who supported the vote on the bond issues, and other stakeholders. So very interesting sort of design task lies ahead of us. And again, I think it's probably smart for us to reach out to the professional survey designers that we have to do this. We won't be able to do work on it in the current quarter, but I'm committed to doing work on it in the April, May, June quarter. So that's the update on that. And I believe that with Member Natoli being liaison to the housing bonds, that she would work together with us on the design when we pick this up. So I'll stop there and see if Jane or anybody had comments, but that's where the status is.
No, that sounds good to me. I know that you've been backed up with other things due to COVID. So just been waiting to pick this up when you get some capacity again. And definitely there's interest in housing. I'll be curious to see what the survey firms say in terms of how we can construct that. I'm a little curious what that product will be. But I think there's sufficient interest there to keep moving forward with this. So looking forward to that.
Peg, do you know what format we could even use, like during COVID era, of like contact-free surveys?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's one of the interesting design challenges. I mean, we had other issues where we would have been doing intercept surveys in other areas of our work during COVID, you know, the street cleanliness and other things. And we just haven't been doing it for all the reasons that you can imagine, even if it were possible to keep socially distant and all those requirements. We just think that the sort of skews that you would get to the data by the current conditions would make it unreliable. So I guess if our professional surveyors still think that intercept surveys would be not a good idea by the time we would have this in the field, we will ask them to do phone surveys, web surveys. I mean, there are other methods, each of which have their own sampling biases, but they can work with us on the design to deal with current conditions.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because even if there's three groups that we're looking to survey, we know who the users are, I would think, and we know who the contractors and developers are. It's just getting to the public opinion that would be difficult, but maybe it's worthwhile doing an even more in-depth survey of the contractors and users, even if we can't get to the public for an overview, although that's probably a pretty important part of this. But maybe we can hear some more about how they're doing that and if it's even a possibility. But you're saying we might not have time for that this quarter with COVID anyway?
Not this quarter, but during the April, May, and June quarter. So
okay,
we can carve out some staff time to begin working with you on the scope and put a scope together so that we can get something out to bid for our contractor pool. And again, with housing, intercept surveys were important for the parks and streets improvements, not so much with housing. So I think we should be able to go forward with a survey design.
Yep. Okay.
So public integrity reviews. So here I'm going to ask Mark to just speak to where they are on the sequence of work that they're doing in the public integrity world. Just a quick update.
Yeah, certainly. As I've mentioned earlier, we've completed four so far. So I think the last time I reported before the committee, I presented on the first two, which were the public works contracting and then gifts to departments through non-city organizations. We have since completed our report on the debarment process, which we issued in early November. Just a couple of weeks ago, on January 11th, we issued our fourth public integrity assessment on the ethical standards for contract award process at the airport and other commissions and boards. So those constitute the four that we've completed so far. We do have, as I mentioned, three that's currently in the pipeline. One is the citywide ethics reporting requirements that we hope to issue next month in February. The other two are currently ongoing. The sixth one is the one on the Department of Building Inspections policies and procedures regarding their award permit award process. And then the other one on the SFPUC Public Utilities Commission contracting process. As we also mentioned before, we are gonna be working on a final report that will basically incorporate a lot of the what we've reported so far, as well as those that run across these various assessments. I think I've mentioned in the past, tone at the top being one of those topics that cut across the various issues that have come up. So that is our current plan, and we hope that by in the next next month is when we will be issuing our next deliverable on ethics reporting. And I'm available to answer any questions that you have.
So next month being March, is it, or end of February?
End of February, yes.
And then when do you expect the other two, the DBI and the PUC?
So the DBI will come next after the ethics one that's forthcoming, and we're anticipating about a March or April, I'm hoping probably April, just based on our data collection and our resources. And then after that is the PUC commission contracting, which will be sometime in the spring as well.
If there's no more questions or comments for Mark, item 2D is independent review of the whistleblower program. And again, just for new members, this is a desire the committee has had to have an outside entity take a look at the design metric success of our whistleblower program, best practice review, try to give ourselves confidence that it's accomplishing the purposes set out in the charter. I will stop there. And I'm sorry, I've forgotten who the whistleblower program liaison is who would speak to it. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Siobhan.
It's me. I think this is very important, and we're still just trying to figure out how to get the request for qualifications and bid scope, right, Peg?
That's right. There's a pool that the controller's office has of outside firms that can perform audit work and various types of work for us. But I think the desire of the committee ended up being not to use the pool either, which means a slightly more complex and longer task of designing something and putting it out to bid in the broader market. So that's where we landed the last time you discussed it, I think. And again, I think the organic limit on this may be our staff time to support it, you know, once your committee has worked on the scope.
Has there been an independent review before?
Mark may be able to speak to this, but not in so many words, not like a published report, but
That's right. No, the last review that pertained to a whistleblower program was the civil grand jury report. And I cannot remember when that was issued. It's been at least over 5 years ago. But that was the last one. There has not been any external review of our whistleblower program. This is one that's really that actually our own whistleblower program has tried to more recently reach out to our peer whistleblower administrators in other jurisdictions, given that we do have a network of whistleblower hotline administrators throughout the country. We're trying to assess whether any of them have actually gone through some sort of a review or a peer review process. And we're awaiting response from that survey that I believe was just deployed by the program last week. So, but based on our understanding, none of them have gone through our peer review, but we will try to confirm that. And if they have actually gone through a peer review, we'll try to find out how they've gone through that process.
Okay, great. Yeah, if you can send any information like that my way, that would be appreciated. And I think we've been talking about beyond an independent review of the whistleblower program, that it would be useful to do a potential user survey of ease of use or confidence, or perhaps roadblocks to using the program. And that could be really valuable as well.
That's right.
So that would be predominantly to city employees or just the general public, I guess. So those we'd like to do that as well.
Okay, that concludes the agenda items listed. Unless the members have any other questions or comments for me or for Mark.
Thank you.
So Roseanne, you wanna go ahead and take public comment on this?
Sure. Members of the public wish to provide public comment on this item should call 415-655-0001, access code 146-289-8016, then pound and then pound again. If you haven't already done so, please dial *3 to line up to speak. A system prompt will indicate you have raised your hand. Please wait until the system indicates you have been unmuted and you may begin your comments. Please note that you will have 3 minutes. So I'm checking for raised hands. There are no raised hands. Can we close public comment and adjourn the meeting?
Yep. Thank you, Roseanne.
Thank you all. For the record, it's 11:03 a.m. Thanks again.
It's a miracle. You get 25 minutes back on your day. Congratulations.
All right. Bye.